Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Freedom of Species would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land on which we broadcast today. We pay our respect to the elders of all of the lands on which we meet across Australia. Apriremo quelle gabbie vili e co-criminali. Animal liberation. Animal liberation. Animal liberation. Whoa.
Welcome to Freedom of Species, the radio show that brings animal advocacy to the airwaves. That was Sally with Out of the Pan, and Sal finished with Best Dress, a song by the Rosie Burgess Set.
That was cool.
That was really cool. That was a live set, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Sal. I'm here with, my name's Trevor, and this is Carolyn.
Hello. Co-host.
And Carolyn.
Yes.
Want to tell us about today's show?
I will. First, we should say that this is the World Week for Animals in Laboratories. And so it's a really good time for us to pause and think about the plight of animals who have suffered and died in laboratory experiments. And we're really excited to welcome our guest today, Dr. Dana Kolsky from Animal Free Science Advocacy. As listeners may know, we have had a couple of interviews with Animal Free Science Advocacy over the sort of last year or so, and we really appreciate AVSA being a sponsor of Freedom of Species and their ongoing support. So we're really excited to have Dana join us. Dana is a dedicated veterinary surgeon whose career is driven by a deep commitment to animal welfare. Since 2018, she's cared for small animals with compassion and integrity, guiding countless families through challenging and complex medical decisions. Before entering the veterinary field, Dana earned degrees in communications and film and television and built a career in media and marketing. A lifelong advocate for animal rights, Dana has volunteered with many animal welfare organisations, turning her passion into action. Deeply concerned with the suffering caused through animal experimentation, Dana now channels her skills and her voice into her work with Animal Free Science Advocacy, working towards ending animal testing and helping animals, not just one by one, but on a much larger scale. Welcome to Freedom of Species.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, welcome.
You're welcome. Would we like to start off with a little bit about you? So a bit about your background and how you came to maybe veterinary science and the animal advocacy work that you're doing.
Yeah, sure. So I've always wanted to work with animals ever since a really young age, and I didn't just want to work with them. I really wanted to make the world a better place for them and make sure that they were treated properly and better as I grew older. And that's what led me to pursue veterinary studies. But when I got into vet science and started studying, I very quickly realized that that's far from what it actually was about. A lot of the students that go there come directly from the animal industries, the very ones that I'm opposed to, where cruelty is just inherent. Having grown up on, dairy farms, cattle farms, and have every intention of working there and believe in the system and do not want to hear about the cruelty that's involved. And so I quickly realised I was a little bit sidelined again. So I chose to work in private practice with small animals. And it can sometimes be hard to feel like you're making a real difference when you're dealing with individuals. So I've always had this itch to help animals on a much larger scale. Now, I'm the grandchild of Holocaust survivors, so I've always been particularly disturbed by the stories of Dr. Mengele and his experiments. And I see a lot of similarities between what those people went through and what animals in research go through. And that's why I have this special place in my heart for the animals in animal research industries. And so when the opportunity came to work in animal free science advocacy, AFSA, I knew I just had to jump at it.
That's incredible.
I was also just on being in the vet field. Like, I know that from what I've heard that the industry of veterinarians does have a really high, well, not really high, but higher than average suicide or harm.
Yes.
Harm rate. Is that something that you were like aware of either before going in, or did you find out when you were involved, or did you get any firsthand like notice of other people going through, or yourself? Or
I didn't know anything about it before going into it, but it's something that you learn of very quickly as soon as you enter that field of study.
Yeah.
And it continues with you as you work in it.
Yeah. So they sort of warn you about it, and
they warn you about it early on. They didn't always, but now it's quite a quite a consistent theme that gets touched on throughout the studies from day one. So students are made aware of it, and then I guess a little bit more focus has been given to it in the workplace.
Yeah. I just thought it's worth mentioning because it's interesting, like the parallels, like we might talk about it later, but like I know it came up in, say, the film. Have we mentioned the film yet?
We haven't. Let's talk about that.
So just quickly, there's a documentary that came out fairly recently called How to Make Drugs and Feel Good About Everything. But it talks about how there can be a human cost of animal abusing industries.
Yes.
Mm. And like often we hear about slaughterhouse workers and trauma and things like that. But I think in veterinary science as well, there is that similar trauma that goes along. And I think that like further from that is that people who are maybe more heightened or susceptible to that get pushed out of those fields. And it's the people who are more resilient and maybe can compartmentalize and turn a blind eye that stay in. And they're maybe not the people that have the same levels of compassion, or maybe not the same. Like, this is just my hypothesis. Like, I'm not saying it's guaranteed, but I think there could be a trend that people who are weaker and don't sort of have the mind to be in those industries are maybe the people that we want in those industries, because they're the ones that are going to be a bit more like compassionate or empathetic to what the animals are going through. I don't know, did you have any thoughts of like if there's a correlation at all maybe between?
Yeah, I mean, what I can say is that when you study vet science, there is so much animal involvement naturally that you will very quickly get desensitized to some of the things that you're doing. So things that I looked at, you know, before having studied the degree and then after, I would look at completely differently. It becomes systemic, you know, in what you're doing. And you do have this culture of, you know, shut up if you want to pass. And if you don't, then you're not made for this. And it's not just in terms of what you're doing to the animals. It's also in terms of the student experience as well. So vet science, as opposed to other degrees in the country, has the most amount of student placements, and they're difficult placements because a lot of them are rural. It's outdoors. It's hard work.
Right.
You're in a high level of physical danger with a lot of the larger animals. And so you really have to be tough. You have to toughen up to get through all those, not just in terms of what you're doing to the animals. I know I was pregnant and had a child in my vet studies.
Oh, wow.
And I got no concessions. So you really have to be able to compartmentalize your feelings and your thoughts and get on with things if you want to actually get through the end. And I think that was sort of a motivating factor for me. I would use that as, okay, I'm going to remember all of this and I'm going to use it one day to help me drive this fight for animal rights and improved welfare for animals in these industries. I'm going to use it against them. And right now I have to, you know, get on with things. And, you know, there is an element of conscientious objection involved always. Yeah. Everyone has their red lines, but it's not something you can fall back on routinely.
It sounds difficult.
That's an incredible insight. I really had assumed that the high rate of, depression and people really struggling with being a vet really related to the, you know, often there's going to be poor outcomes for animals. And that's obviously heartbreaking.
Unfortunately, and I don't want to speak on behalf of all vets, I would say off the bat that it has less to do with the animals and the health outcomes and more to do with just the working environment, the way that they're treated in general.
Really?
By the public. Yes, it's a very high risk, low reward profession.
Wow.
Very undervalued. There's a lot of stresses that come with the job that people don't think about. It's literal life and death every day.
Mm.
You know, and you really can't compare it to human doctors in terms of, you know, what you get back for it.
Yeah.
Very underappreciated, undervalued in general. So yeah. it's very hard to go home at the end of the day, have all of those feelings, and then in addition to that, think about all of your patients and, you know, how they're going and whether you did good medicine or not, and all of the things that come with working in a clinical setting.
Mm. Amazing. Thank you for sharing that insight. Yes. Mm. Well, as Trev mentioned, we are going to talk about the documentary film that came out, I think it was late last year. So it is called How to Make Drugs and Feel Good About Everything. The director and the person who is in most of the film is Journey Zephyr, and they were a co-producer of Cowspiracy and What the Health, so other films that people might be familiar with. And it really starts out with Journey talking about themselves and struggling with, you know, what they believe they have, you know, depression, and then really looking at, I guess, what the potential options might be in terms of sort of medication, which actually helps them sort of delve into animal testing, which is quite a, you know, I guess quite a hidden industry in many, many ways. So anyone want to sort of kick off with thoughts about that? Or
I've obviously watched the film.
Yeah.
I think what's really great about this film is that it really introduces the ideas of the critical thinking about the animal testing industry in a very approachable way. Mm. There's nothing too graphic or gruesome. You might even call it a little bit comedic in its approach. And it's a really lighthearted way to get people looking at this field and listening to the issues that come with it. And he's done that in a creative way without showing anything, you know, too graphic, too violent, which is usually what puts people off listening and talking about it altogether. In that regard, if there is someone who's new to this field, this is a really great way to introduce yourself to some of the issues that occur within this industry. If you want to get more into any of those issues, you would need to research a little bit more. That's where AFSA might come in Australia.
Yeah.
But it's a really good introduction to this field and an array of the different issues that are inherent within it.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought, like, as Carolyn said, like, the journey, I guess, the way of, like, it was clear to me that, you know, it was a documentary about animal testing, but it wasn't clear at the start, like, how that connection was going to be made. And I guess to me, I thought the start of the documentary was quite a bit all over the place. Seemed like they were just trying to sort of throw a whole bunch of different sides of the argument out at the audience and see what might hit. But I thought overall, I did enjoy the documentary and I thought that it had a good message overall. I did have a few sort of criticisms of bits and pieces, but I've also had criticisms of those previous documentaries like Christspiracy, What the Health, Cowspiracy, Seaspiracy. Mm. Like, we've unfortunately got a bit of a track record of some of these animal advocacy movies having a few issues with the way they're presented or the way they present things, and we've done shows on that before. It doesn't take away from the overall message. Like, we're obviously 100% against animal testing and for moving towards alternatives. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the strongest part of the film was looking at that as a realistic outcome in the near future.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I can say about that is that they do jump from topic to topic quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that would also be the natural process that someone might go through if they're completely new to this field, because they'll look at one issue and they'll think, oh, but hold on, what about that?
Yeah.
You know, it opens their eyes to more and more. So I think that that might be something that someone goes through when they are learning about this for the first
going
time.
Going down a rabbit
exactly.
hole.
Exactly. Like, there's so many questions. Yeah, and I always say, like, animal research is one of those fields where the more you learn, the worse it gets. So one thing leads to another. So I think that that might also just be the way that he thought about it. You know, maybe he wasn't intending to touch on all of those things, but then he couldn't help himself because he was so curious, and one area, you know, inspired him or got him thinking about another. And that might be the process for quite a lot of people who are completely new to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. For me, I think it actually does a really good job of showing how large-scale systems or industries normalize harm when profit is involved. So, you know, there's the same logic that applies to, you know, industrial animal agriculture. Animal suffering becomes invisible when it's built into the system, and society can normalize that kind of behavior that's unethical. And I do think that... yeah, they did a really good job of explaining how powerful the drug companies are and that animal testing lobby, you know, and how much investment there is in, you know, maintaining the status quo. That's really, really important to these huge companies. So, again, as you said, Dana, I think as an introduction to some of the issues around animal testing, I think they did, you know, a great job there.
And just quickly, while we're sort of talking about introduction of certain issues, I know we've heard a bit about Dana's like history and we've heard a bit now about the film, but would you like to give us a little bit of an intro for people who might not know about AFSA, so Animal Free Science Advocacy, and what you do and what you're about?
Yes, thank you so much. So as the name implies, we advocate for animal-free science. Specifically, we believe that no animal should be harmed in the name of science, and that we can achieve scientific progress through animal-free research methods that are ethical, human-specific, and scientifically valid. And we're the only organisation in Australia that are advocating exclusively for animals in research and teaching. And our work encompasses everything from awareness campaigns and scientific outreach right through to political lobbying and policy reform. And we're not just exposing the problems, we're also laying out all the solutions, because the technology's there, the infrastructure is there. But what we do lack is transparency and funding and public support. And so our biggest hurdle is awareness about all of these issues. If we can overcome those, all the solutions are there ready to go, leading us to a more ethical outcome at the end, with better health outcomes for people as well, which is our end goal with this industry at the end of the day, or at least it should be. So yes, we are a not-for-profit charity in Australia, and we're a small team, but we're a mighty team, and we really do feel this year like change is around the corner.
That's great. Fantastic.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
It's funny hearing, like you say, like the aim of AFSA, like I think one of the first things you said was about like believing that no animal should suffer for, like that was one thing that I thought, like, it was good that it was in the film, but it did take a long time for them to get to it, and they sort of glossed over it, which I can understand. It's maybe not the most mainstream, easy way to approach this topic, but for me, that's the most important, is to try and persuade people, especially who maybe aren't vegan or who aren't already, like, maybe animal advocates in some way, but to get them to realise that, well, science aside, do these animals deserve to go through this? What have they done wrong? Why do we feel that we have the power to put another being, another innocent being, through this sort of torture, regardless of the ends? Like, I just think like that's something that we have to approach from like square one, and that a lot of people gloss over. And I feel like that's such an important part of this issue. Like, to me, that makes it the non-negotiable.
I agree with you. I think that should be the focus, and I think that should be the driving factor in every decision we make about this industry. Surprisingly, I mean, AFSA did a national poll just late last year, and a quarter, I think it was, or close to a quarter of the respondents believed that we have a moral right to experiment on animals, which I think is quite fascinating. But if you put the ethics aside, there are so many arguments that you could lean on to argue against animal testing. It's not just the ethics. I think that should be the focus. But if we put that aside, you know, there's so much money driven into this industry and so little to show for it at the end. And this is our tax money. Okay. So I think it holds a little bit more value because it should be representative of what Australians want and feel. So we can speak about it from a financial perspective. We can speak about it from a legislative perspective as well, looking at Australia versus other countries in the world and precedents that they may have set in this field. You can look at it scientifically as well, just looking at the raw data and seeing, are we actually achieving what we set out to do? Is this working? Is this not? Are there alternatives there? So you can argue this from a lot of different angles. The ethical one is just one of them.
Yeah.
I wish it would be the focus.
On that, do you know, like, not to put you on the spot too much, but like, what are maybe some countries that are doing better than others? Like, you know, like, I'm assuming that Australia, unfortunately, and America might be in the bottom of the pile, but are there any countries that are doing a particularly good job or maybe just better than us in terms of progressing on these issues?
Yes. We're seeing a lot of change recently happening on a policy and legislative level around the world. I think probably the country that everyone's looking at the most right now is surprisingly the USA.
As being a leader?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, I'm surprised.
So, yeah, they had the Modernization Act 2.0 passed in 2023. Basically, it meant that non-clinical tests would include non-animal models, meaning that they could have non-animal methods as recognized means by which to develop a drug. And if implemented, that would essentially abolish the mandate to test on animals, which has been around since 1938. We're now waiting for the Modernization Act 3.0 to be passed. And they've also introduced a roadmap to phase out animal testing within the next 5 years. That was introduced in April last year. They've already achieved their year one goals.
Wow.
And animal testing is in that roadmap. The aim is to make that the exception, not the norm. So it would be significantly reduced, not eliminated, but nonetheless, it would be looked at as the exception. in the UK, we have similar. They also have a roadmap to phase out animal testing within 5 years. That was introduced last November.
Just to clarify, these are like completely animal testing gone, like not just in certain industries like cosmetics or something, or not just in like, but everything.
In drug development.
Wow.
Yeah. They also have recently published guidelines on the approach to using non-animal methods, which essentially encourages the use of non-animal methods and outlines how to use them in studies so that they can be accepted and published.
Yeah.
In the EU, we're also seeing similar, another roadmap to phasing out animal testing that led to a 3R's working group, which led to an international one, which Australia is a part of. There is the Netherlands. They were the most ambitious. They wanted to phase out all animal testing by 2025. They didn't succeed, but they've at least, I think, what I think we're seeing from all these countries essentially is that there is that cultural shift, that desire to move away from what we've traditionally known science to be, which is falling on animal testing, and move towards human-specific methods, which they're realising now are more effective and a better investment. We're not seeing that same commitment from Australia, unfortunately.
It's interesting you said, because before you answer the question, without any data, I would have assumed like Scandinavia, some of those like Western European countries would have been at the front. But for you to say that America's sort of a bit stronger position is really surprising.
Yes.
Yeah, really interesting.
So it was only sort of recently that they sort of overtook the Netherlands as being like maybe the most ambitious or...
There's been a lot happening in the background for quite a while, but 2025 saw a lot of these things really come into effect.
Okay. Wow. So it's a really fast-moving time.
It is, and
animal alternatives.
It is, and if Australia wants to be, you know, a leader in scientific innovation, and in
which
policy,
we don't really do. If you go about what the governments do, but we historically we want to, and like we've got great historical precedents that we should be. Like Australia should be on the forefront of these sort of areas. But go on.
We should, but we haven't demonstrated any commitment really to do that. I mean, we're on the working group for the 3Rs, but we've got nothing to show for it in practice.
Yeah.
So this is, again, where awareness comes in with the Australian public and making it known to our PMs that this should be on their agenda, and then looking at these other countries as a precedent and wanting to follow suit and wanting to be part of the change, not lagging behind, which is the current state. Unfortunately, that is the situation for Australia for a lot of animal industries.
And not to be like too off topic, but it's like Australia for a long time, like I guess in progressive circles, we're saying we need to transition. Like the main thing Australia is known for is exporting fossil fuels. And we need to try and get away from that as our main, you know, country's, you know, dollar ticket or whatever, like the way we establish ourselves in the world. And we've had all these opportunities of like being on the forefront of like renewable energy or being on the forefront of safer, like, because animal free testing, as you say, it's used in everything. It's going to be huge. And if Australia was right, like if the CSIRO and other organisations were given more funding and they could be on the forefront of these issues, as we have historically in the past for decades, then, you know, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
But we really do have the opportunity to be a world leader if we were to take this on. Yeah. All the infrastructure, the technology, the systems, everything is there. The solutions are there.
Well, should we take a quick break?
I think we will take a quick break. And let's go with your first song, Dana, which is Beautiful Boy by John Lennon. Can you tell us why you selected that song?
Yes. So all the songs that I chose today are songs that I, as a parent, sing to my young children. This one I sing to them every night before going to bed. And the reason that I thought about it was because we've recently been doing a lot of exposure work on the use of primates, but specifically mothers and babies. And when I was reading about their individual stories through some of the research studies that they were involved in, I think that as a parent, you know, the pain of losing your child or seeing your child being hurt or in distress or dying even is a level of suffering that I don't think can be surpassed. And I look at that as a parent and I empathize on a whole other level. And so when we were looking at that over the last few weeks, you know, I'd sing my kids this song every night and think, oh my gosh, I'm so lucky to have them and they're safe, but I can't say the same for these animals. And then that was the connection there. So I really wish that these mother primates could, you know, just sing their own kids to sleep at night and have those minimal comforts, but they can't. So my heart goes out to them.
Yeah.
Monster's gone, he's on the run, and your daddy's here. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science, and scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Friday, May 1st is May Day, International Workers' Day. Join 3CR all day in our 50th year of coverage in solidarity with the continued struggle for labour rights and fair working conditions for all our communities around the world.
We got May Day specials from regular Friday shows and special presentations from 3CR's programmers from across the grid. For more info, head to www.3cr.org.au/May Day 2026.
Friday, May the 1st.
Tune in all day right here on 3CR.
Whatever happened to the 8-hour day? Whatever happened to the 8-hour day?
Welcome back to Freedom of Species here on 3CR this Sunday afternoon. My name's Trevor. We've got Carolyn and our guest Dana in the studio from AFSA, which is Animal Free Science Advocacy. And we've been chatting a bit about animal testing and the documentary that came out last year called How to Make Drugs and Feel Great About Everything, or Feel Good About Everything, whichever it was. So the first segment we talked a little bit about both AFSA and animal testing overall and the film and the issues related to that. But I was interested, I guess, like for people who watch the film, especially here in Australia, because it's a very American-centric film, what should people know about the Australian side of animal testing, or like, you know, what animals or what campaigns are happening, or if someone doesn't know, help us know.
Yeah, absolutely. So the film is American and it talks about the American industry without saying so specifically, but unfortunately what we see there is pretty much what you can expect to see here.
Right.
There aren't any major significant differences. Pretty much the kind of experimentation that we see happening in America is also happening here.
Yeah.
They probably have a higher use of animals in that there's more animals each year. The count is higher, but the count for Australia is in the millions too. It's not an insignificant number. So I think looking at that film, any takeaways that you have from it are applicable to Australia. That's unfortunately the situation. It's a lot more extensive here, the industry, than people would appreciate. And what we have found over the years, and specifically in this poll that we conducted last year amongst Australians, is that the awareness is still our key issue, but a large proportion of people just have no idea that it exists, let alone that it exists to the extent that it does, or includes some of the things that it does. A lot of people will assume that it's just limited to, you know, cosmetic testing and product toxicity testing, but not, you know, drug development and the kinds of really invasive research that do occur. So awareness is the biggest hurdle to any of the issues that we could discuss about this industry.
Yeah.
But there aren't major differences from what we've seen in the film happening in the USA.
So what would you say would be like the most, like what species of animals are experimented on the most in Australia?
I think overall, if we look just at numbers, the highest are actually going to be fish and birds.
Wow.
Yeah. Fish farming. Yeah. And birds, poultry specifically. We obviously have a lot of rodents, but there are also in smaller numbers dogs, cats, and primates.
Okay. What's the testing for fish?
Or
aquatic animals, I should probably say, because I'm not sure what.
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't looked at very many studies recently, what they're doing, but I would imagine that a lot of it is associated with the aquaculture industry. Fish farming.
Also testing on...
Yeah, I think also using a lot of fish-based products in medical products, you know, like fish skins and things like that, but I actually haven't read a lot of the recent studies with... fish, so I wouldn't be able to tell you specifically. I'm just assuming right now. They are very heavily used. People generally tend to think about, you know, dogs and cats because they're the most easy to empathize with for us. But unfortunately, it's the animals that people, you know, really don't look at very often or care very much for that get used the most.
I guess it just surprised me because I'm expecting the animal testing to happen on animals that are closer to humans in either mammals or marsupials or something, that are going to be, whereas fish seem quite at the further end of the spectrum of association with humans. So
it's
interesting.
In America, you know, in the film they even talk about a mandate to test on, you know, a rodent species and a non-rodent species. It's strange because, you know, we're not giant mice and they're not tiny people. Very little between
that
us.
Stood that stood out to me as well.
Yeah.
Not just doing it once with one species, doing it again.
So do you know also, like, for, I guess, different listeners in different areas, like what might exist in their local areas that they might have no knowledge of? Like, do you know, say, like big centres like Melbourne and Sydney, like what the nearest sort of facilities that would be that and what animals are tested there?
Yeah, so pretty much all the universities have to some extent got their foot in that industry, and that would be the main perpetrators, I guess, if you want to call them that. The biggest primate breeding and testing facility in the country is down in Gippsland, Victoria.
Right.
We actually have a page on our website called On Your Doorstep where you can go type in your address and see what facilities are nearby to you where animal testing may be happening.
Awesome.
Yeah. It's a lot more commonplace than people would think. The issue is that it's all done in the utmost of secrecy, you know, in basement laboratories, you know, locked doors.
Yeah.
You can't know about what you can't see.
Exactly.
So it might be, you know, two doors down, but you wouldn't know. It's all hidden from us very intentionally.
Do you think most of it is happening in more regional areas, like, as you say, Gippsland, or is some of it happening, like, really in, like, inner suburb, like, CBD areas?
Most of it, I think, is within universities, which are generally quite central.
And the city locations rather than the regional locations?
Yep.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, so it's just, like, secretly in, like...
I mean, it depends on the species. You know, obviously, if you're looking at cattle, for example, that's not going to be in the city centre. But if you're thinking about traditional laboratories with heaps of animal cages, that's going to be... That can be essentially in any university or in any research institution. Hospitals, you know, they have their associated research institutes. So one generally thing, metro.
One thing they mentioned in the movie was the big breeding programs that... I guess, produce the animals that are then going to be tested on. Do you know if that happens locally in Australia or do we get animals from another breeding program in a different country?
I'm not sure about all species, but I can say for primates, we have our breeding facility in Gippsland.
Yeah.
That facility has capacity for somewhere about 800 or so primates at a time.
Wow.
And that's just one of the facilities. There are others.
Like that's just the largest one. That's it's not the largest only one. Primate facility in Australia. It's just the largest
It's the largest one and the one that's doing the most studies that we're seeing come out on primates in Australia.
Wow.
So I know that they are bred locally, but where they source, you know, the original, you know, founders of that, you know, cohort of primates, I'm not sure where that's.
But you know,
started.
If even like say the dog breeding or rodent breeding happens locally, do you think, or does it happen?
I don't know of a local provider, but I wouldn't be surprised. It's such a lucrative industry. Everything from the breeding to the cages to the specialized equipment to the staff that are involved. You know, everyone's feeding each other's back pockets. So I would not be surprised if that existed. Yeah.
And it does sound like there's, like, I know it's a secretive industry, but it sounds like there's still a lot of unknowns, especially in, like, I guess a smaller market like Australia. Like, I guess some of these films expose what happens in America because it's a bigger population, a lot more people and more chances of whistleblowers. But it sounds like Australia is, there's a few sort of black holes still. We don't really know exactly what's happening in certain spots.
Yeah. It's really hard for us to know what actually is happening behind closed doors because it's intentionally secretive.
Yeah.
I always think back to, you know, that saying, I think it goes, you know, like if slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be vegetarian.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing. If we could just very casually walk through an animal laboratory and see for ourselves what's happening, I'm sure that they wouldn't be operating at the extent
that
they
are.
They wouldn't be getting away with what they are.
No.
And there's a reason why you can't just go take a tour in an animal laboratory. There's a reason why we keep being denied our requests for information and footage.
Yeah.
And it's up to organizations like ours to expose what's happening. And at this current time, the best way that we've been able to obtain information or expose the reality is through Freedom of Information requests, FOIs, which cost us money, and we use our donations to fund those.
Yeah.
And often we are denied.
Denied.
Sometimes they take months, years. It can be a very disheartening process. And then through the published studies. So we have, you know, we sit down with all of the recent studies that were published and we pore over them and try and, you know, work out what was happening to different animals and what extent. And to the point that, I mean, you've spoken with our primate consultant, Robin, and we have our this campaign, Honor Me With a Name for Primates, where essentially you can purchase the right to give a name to a primate that's passed in animal research. she went and identified those primates by poring over research, looking at the ID number of individual animals and tracking them through different studies.
Wow. Incredible.
And turning that into a real story. It's just amazing, but it's, you know, sitting there poring over papers, it's really hard work, it's boring work, it's administrative work, but we're the only ones doing it. And without that, there is no reliable, credible source of information in Australia giving you the hard data and the realities of what is happening. You really have nowhere to go. You can't rely on the industry itself because it's self-regulated.
Yes.
So you can really see that because in all the years that this has been happening, there have been very, very few situations where anyone has really, you know, gotten in trouble for something, and they were always because of something administrative. It was never about what actually happened to the animal or something that happened in a study. Even when we've had, you know, RSPCA Animals Australia and every other animal welfare organisation on our side and speaking out against something specific that we've exposed, and we have no one to go to with this, you know, we'll go as high as we can, but at the end of the day, they answer only to themselves. So it's no surprise that there is no reliable data out there for people to really go and learn about this field and see what's happening for themselves. Everything that is out there that is objective, I would say, comes from us, in Australia at least. And we're a small organisation. And it's not fair that that all falls on us. We really need to be able to have proper scrutiny and, you know, a watchdog that is there for, you know, all the right reasons. And we don't in this industry. Even in other animal industries, like food-based ones, for example, they have more going on to help the animals and ensure that there aren't, you know, breaches than they do in animal research. And as a vet, I think that animals in the research industry are arguably suffering the worst. The cruelty there is
the types of things.
I think that that is the worst kind of suffering. That's my personal opinion. But they also have the least representation in our legal system. They have next to no rights. So it's, it's just horrific what goes on there.
It really is. I think we're going to take a quick pause there. We're going to go to another song and then we can come back and talk about some of the campaigns and how people can get involved and actually help
and
animal testing. So,
which was your next song choice?
The next song was...
Was it Lenny Kravitz?
Lenny Kravitz, Fly Away. Yeah, so we were speaking about the most used species. So birds and poultry are one of the main species that are used. So, you know, the lyrics here, I want to fly away. They usually can't even spread their wings in the cages that they're kept in. So I think, and this is, again, something that is on repeat at our house. So, yeah, natural choice for me.
Excellent.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
NDIS was built on choice and control. Dignity of risk, enabled through supported decision-making, means we lead our lives with everyday risks, not through others' decisions for us.
Listen to the interview with Megan Spenlet-Smith on Wednesday, 29th of April at 6pm on 3CR, 8:55am.
We're back on Freedom of Species. It is Trev and Caroline today with our guest Dana from AVSA. And we've been talking about animal testing, and that song was Lenny Kravitz's Fly Away. Great song. So in this last little section, I was hoping you could talk about the Primate campaign, and what are some things that people can do to get involved and help with ending animal testing?
Yes, and I think it's easy to walk away from the film and just feel really hopeless and helpless about the situation, because it's such a, you know, a big system, and who are we to challenge this big, you know, long system? But anyway, so there is actually a lot that we can do, and we really feel that change is around the corner. We spoke earlier about all the change happening internationally, that cultural shift is already happening. We have seen that the majority of Australians actually do want to see alternatives in place of animal testing. We saw that in our recently conducted poll. So we know that the public support is there. We now need to put it into action. So I think that the most tangible of goals that we have right now from all of the different campaigns that we have going on is our campaign to end primate testing. Tangible because at the end of the day, when you look at a primate, you can see its suffering and understand its experience and what it is going through and the ethics associated with that a lot more easily. So being able to empathize with them is really going to be a driver for a lot of people, unfortunately. Mm. So the primate testing is also one of the worst kinds of testing that exists. It's highly invasive, and that also involves a lot of mothers and babies that we recently exposed as well. So we really feel like this is a low-hanging apple from the tree that would be easy for us to tick off. We recently conducted a petition in Parliament, and it got the third highest amount of signatures in that cycle. So public support's definitely there. We really just need to continue with this momentum and let our MPs know that we are in favour of ending primate testing. And with enough support, I think we can get this one knocked off of the list. We've got all the reasoning to do it, but also the public support. And we're already in motion to try and, you know, help find the solutions to being able to phase this system out. So if you go onto AFSA's homepage, there is a section on our campaigns. You'll see there the campaign to end primate testing, and you can help either by donating or by following some of the actions that we have listed there, such as sending letters of support to MPs to help our help promote our campaign and be aware of the petition that was recently put through Parliament. The other campaign that I think we should really give focus on at the moment is our Fund the Future campaign. And one thing that the film it highlighted very well was that we really need funding for alternatives. It's not just about phasing out animal testing, but also giving a push for all these amazing alternatives that are coming out now. And in Australia, our tax dollars pay for nearly all of the animal experimentation that occurs. Just in 2024, we spent over $295 million in taxpayer money on animal research studies, and only $4.4 million went to a non-animal specific project in New South Wales. We already have the technology. We have the results. We have everything we need to get better drugs and treatments out there to Australians and faster, but we need funding to be able to do it. So if you go to our webpage on Fund the Future, you can send a letter to your local MP asking them to support our submission to the federal budget, asking for that change specifically.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We will put those links in the show notes, so it makes it really easy for listeners to jump on and do that, and, you know, the APSA website as well.
Yes.
And one thing I noticed that we didn't really mention, and we're running out of time, so we won't go into details, but as you said, one thing that the movie showed, the film, the doco showed at the end, is that the alternatives are looking extremely promising. Like they're not, they're not like decades around the corner. Like the technology exists for using human-based, but obviously not human, like sort of petri dish, like human cells and petri dish organs and things like that. Or they say organ on a chip and things like that. So there's ways that we now have technology to test drugs and other things directly on human tissue, not even just human tissue, even just patient-specific. So we could have like patient-specific testing to make sure that this drug is not going to have an adverse reaction on this actual individual that's in the hospital bed. You can check it first.
Yep.
It might take a couple of months, but and then it's done.
I think years ago we would have looked at what's happening now and thought, oh my God, that's so, you know, sci-fi and futuristic. But no, the future is already here.
They're doing
these incredible things.
It just needs funding.
Exactly. You need to get you can get personalized treatments and medications,
yeah.
Tailored specifically to you as an individual.
Yeah.
It's really amazing what they're managing to do, and there's no animals involved, but we really need them to be available to people, and we need them here and now. If you're diagnosed with something, you don't have time to wait for something to be developed in the traditional way using animals, and you don't have the funding for that either. Yeah. You need answers now. And so the system plays a huge part in making the data available to us, giving us the ability to make informed choices and having access to these treatments. And we need their involvement to be able to do that, not only on a legislative level, financially too. And the public has already spoken. They want that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, look, that's pretty much everything, I think.
Yeah, we're out of time.
But thanks so much, Dana, for coming on the show. And
pleasure.
It's been an incredible conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. It's like I said, the more you discover, the more you find out exists, and it's a rabbit hole.
So we will have those links in the show notes. We really encourage people to get involved with AFSA.
And people can become a member of AFSA?
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways that you can help AFSA. You can follow us and get the latest industry updates and insights. Yeah. If you can afford to, you can donate to us. We are completely funded by donations. We receive no government funding. You can support our campaigns, whether that's sending a letter or signing a petition. You'll see that all on our website. You can become a member, or you can buy a membership for your pet symbolically, which is really cute. And you can also buy our merchandise.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
If you jump on the website, everything's all there, ready to go.
Thank you so much.
Well, we have to run out of the studio. It's Rotations that's coming up next.
Yes, but we are going out with Queen, I Want to Break Free.
So thanks again.
Thanks, Dana.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.